back over $100 a barrel. I'm Lisa Brady, Fox News Radio.
Knowing the Truth with Pastor Kevin Bowling is a live call-in radio program providing doctrinal dialogue, cultural commentary, and insightful interviews with some of today's foremost Christian authors and leaders. Knowing the Truth is the outreach ministry of the Mountain Bridge Bible Fellowship, located on Highway 25 in Traveler's Rest. The goal of the church and the radio program is to seek the glory of God in the salvation of sinners and the sanctification of the saints by the ministry of the Word. For more information, go to www.knowingthetruth.org. Here with today's edition of Knowing the Truth is Pastor Kevin Bowling.
Hey, welcome into this Tuesday edition of the Knowing the Truth radio program. We've got a couple of great shows lined up for you on the radio program starting today. And then also tomorrow and Thursday, all this week, and I think you know why this is taking place at this point, but all this week we're going to be focusing on the subject of politics. I've noticed sometimes with some various Christians that when they speak about politics, sometimes they speak about it in a way as if Christians aren't even supposed to be involved in it, that because they view it in a very cynical way as being so corrupt, and there has been a lot of bad things that have happened in it. We understand that. But they've kind of taken it too far, almost as if Christians then are marginalized now and really have no place being involved in politics at all. I don't believe that, and I don't think that that's what the Scripture teaches at all. I think that the Lord Jesus Christ, when he looks at every molecule in the entire universe, every single one of them, he says, mine. And so he is ultimately the authority in every single realm, every single aspect of our life, and every single realm that we live in. The Lord Jesus Christ and the gospel of the Lord Jesus Christ has something to say about that. And so as Christians, we shouldn't allow ourselves to be marginalized just because the process has been, others have mistreated the process. We should be involved, and we should bring the gospel to bear. We should think deeply about who we should elect and a number of things along that line. So all this week, we're going to talk about subjects related to politics. Tomorrow on the broadcast, let me give you a sneak peek of what's going to take place the rest of the week, and then I'll announce what we're doing today. The rest of the week, tomorrow, Newt Gingrich, former Speaker Newt Gingrich, will be with me for the first part of the broadcast tomorrow. If you watched the debate last night, you probably saw that there were a couple of times during the debate that Speaker Gingrich had some very good things to say. I think he received a standing ovation for one of his comments that he made. And so we'll be talking with him about that on tomorrow's broadcast. Also, World Magazine will join me in the second half of tomorrow. And in between the two of those, David Barton may be joining me, David from Wall Builders. And we'll be talking about the role of government with David Barton on the program tomorrow as well. And then from World Magazine, we'll be taking a look at the issues facing the churches in New York City and the fact that they are being ousted from holding their services in the public schools in New York City. So we'll talk with a reporter on scene there in New York City. On Thursday's broadcast, Dr. David Hall is going to be my guest on the program. Dr. Hall wrote a book called Calvin in the Public Square. And you may remember Dr. Hall's been with me before. He was the head of Calvin 500. But we'll be talking with him about the Genevan reformer, John Calvin, and talking with him about what did Calvin write specifically in the Institutes of Christian Religion. What did he write about politics? And so we'll be looking at that with Dr. Hall as well. So you don't want to miss out on that program. Tony Perkins is scheduled to join with me, and Tony will probably join with me on that Thursday broadcast. I want to get Tony's perspective on the meeting that took place this past week of a group of evangelical leaders in Texas. They came out of that meeting and supported, at least 75% or so, supported the candidacy of Senator Rick Santorum. And so I want to talk to Tony Perkins, who was there and who, I believe, was advocating for Senator Santorum. And so I want to talk to him specifically about that issue. On today's program, we've got a couple of guests lined up, and the couple of guests that we're going to be speaking to, I want to talk to about, I received a Facebook post the other day from a friend of mine, and he said, oh, no, we're going to have to vote for the lesser of two evils, is what he said on the Facebook post, to which I responded this: we always vote for the lesser of two evils. Man at his best is still man at best. And although we may wish otherwise, the fact is that we can be 100% positive that whoever ultimately is elected president, or even who we vote for in these primaries, will be a fallen and a flawed individual. And we can be sure of that. So this notion that there is some sort of a perfect individual out there, a perfect president, if you will, that we can elect is just a faulty notion. We don't find that. We know that the person may be a believer, may be saved by grace, may be redeemed by the Lord Jesus Christ and his person and his work, but we can't find that perfect person out there. So we have to, that's being said, we have to realize that. That being said, we have the responsibility to carefully consider all the candidates and to not only look at their public policy, but also to look at their character and their integrity, because that matters as well. As much as folks tell us it doesn't matter, it does matter, especially to the evangelical Christians. And so here to talk with me about that, first up is Jim Bob Duggar. Jim Bob is from the show, the TLC program, that I know many people in our listening audience love and are great fans of. But it's the TLC program called 19 Kids and Counting, the Duggar family. And they are currently here in the Greenville area. In fact, right after the program today at 3:30 p.m., they're going to be in person over at Chick-fil-A on Pelham Road. And they'll be there speaking for a few minutes and speaking about the subject that we're going to talk a little bit about here today. We also have in the studio with me Bruce Barron, an author, a former campaign spokesman for Rick Santorum 22 years ago. But he's now here in town as a volunteer on his own dime, spending his own money volunteering for the campaign. And I thought that this was an interesting story, so I invited Bruce to come with me in the studio, and we're going to talk in the second half of the program about why would he do this? What does he see in this candidate? Why would he go ahead and do this on his own nickel in order to promote this particular candidate? So there's where we're going in today's broadcast. First up, Jim Bob, welcome to the Knowing the Truth radio program.
Hello, Kevin. Hey, glad to be on your radio show. And I tell you what, you were talking about Bruce coming here on his own dime. I think there's quite a few other people that have done the same thing, who've come to South Carolina just to help with the Rick campaign. I know we traveled up to Iowa and helped him up there just because we really believe that he's the family value candidate, that is somebody that has consistently stood for truth, for lower taxes, less government. He's the one that authored the bill to ban partial birth abortion in America, and we are just 100% behind him. And so we've traveled all the way over here to South Carolina. Several of my kids have been here for about 10 days, and Michelle and I flew in last Thursday and have been here working. And anyway, just really feel strongly about this cause and that we need someone that really believes in God, that looks at government decisions through how they view the Bible and the Constitution of the United States.
Mm. Now, Jim, you also served for a bit. Was that in the U.S. Congress?
I was an Arkansas state representative for two terms and was also a candidate for U.S. Senate back in 2002.
Okay. So obviously, you know something of the process there and just the environment. As I was saying before, what would you say to Christians who, evangelical Christians, which is primarily our listening audience, what would you say to them who, you know, they're just frustrated? They say, well, you know, we've tried to have good candidates elected before, but, you know, we just don't seem to make any progress. Roe v. Wade is still intact and so on and so forth. What would you say to that type of person listening here today?
I would say every vote counts. And we went out to Iowa and really tried to campaign hard for Rick Santorum. And I wish we would have worked just another few, just converted another nine people, because
yeah,
you end up losing by 8 votes out of 100,000 votes.
Mm.
And so we came over to South Carolina to tell everybody that their vote does count.
Mm.
And I think everybody that's listening to this message could call their friends and recommend for them also to vote for Rick Santorum. And I might just run over a few facts about him so people will know who he is, what he stands for, and I think that's important in the decision-making process.
Well, that would be great. You know, last night, part of the debate, they were lamenting the fact of the new super PACs, these groups that can pretty much say anything about a candidate, and then nobody is held responsible for what's said. It's very easy to get around it. So there have been some negative ads out there about Senator Santorum. Let me give you the opportunity to tell us the positive side. Tell us what your experience has been with him.
Okay, well, Rick has been married for over 21 years to his wife, Karen, and they have 7 children. And their youngest is actually a special needs child. She's 3.5 years old. But they are just a precious family, and we've got to spend some time with them and just really appreciate their values. And Rick, of course, in 1990, he felt like God had put on his heart to run for Congress. But the only problem was he was living in Pennsylvania. There was a Democrat that had been in for 7 terms.
Mm.
And Rick ran against this guy because he thought he was liberal, and he ran against him, ended up beating him, and won the Congress seat. 4 years later, he felt like God was calling him to run for United States Senate, and he ran against another Democrat incumbent that was liberal, and he ended up winning that, and he served 12 years in the U.S. Senate. And anyway, while he was there, he just had a proven conservative track record of standing for what's right, running bills that were conservative. He authored the bill to ban partial birth abortion in America. He worked it through the House, worked it through the Senate, actually got President Clinton to sign the bill, which is a great feat.
Hmm.
And then he also did welfare reform. He has worked on the issues of Social Security. He's an expert on the threat of Iran being our number one threat to America.
Hmm.
And he's pro-Israel, he's pro-gun, he's pro-God. He's somebody that stands for the values we believe in, and that's the reason we have traveled on our own dime over here to help him.
You know, I mentioned earlier that there were folks that were lamenting the fact that although we have elected good candidates before to both houses of the Congress, it seems, and sometimes even as president, it seemed like nothing was happening. But that's not really true, right? There's been a lot of progress in the sense of partial birth abortion bans and defunding of Planned Parenthood and other. There have been victories along the way, right?
Right. There has been some victories along the way, but what we need more people to get involved who could run for office. As a matter of fact, this is the season to file for office and to run for office. And so I would encourage people out there in radio land that are conservative Christians to check out and find out who their representatives are. Are they representing their values? If they're not, maybe I ought to pray about running themselves or encouraging a friend to run.
Hmm.
And it would be great to have a whole slew of conservative candidates running for every seat in South Carolina and throughout the United States.
Jim Bob, another thing that people somewhat complain about is within the evangelicalism, they say, well, every year this or every time a major election comes along, they say the same thing happens. We end up now splitting the vote between a couple of conservative candidates. A lesser, a more liberal candidate among the mix then becomes the beneficiary of that split vote. And so we end up putting somebody in that we're not as happy with, although better than, in this case, better than the incumbent, but nevertheless not the person that's as strong on the issues as we would like. What would you say to that, and what did you think about the meeting of the 150 or so evangelical leaders that took place last week in Texas?
I was so encouraged by the 150 top evangelistic groups throughout America had a big meeting down in Texas in Houston on Saturday, and I think about three-fourths of them decided, and the whole group together decided to get behind Rick Santorum for president, because he is somebody that is strongly believes in the family values. He has a consistent track record of voting for what's right, standing for what's right, even when it's not popular to do so. Mm-hmm. And so I think that track record is so important to look at versus Mitt Romney is somebody that, you know, he says he's conservative, but can you trust what he's saying? And I think it's important to look back at his track record. And I think that one thing that a lot of people, especially here in South Carolina, don't realize and that the media has not brought out is when he was a governor of Massachusetts, number one, he put forth a socialized health care program, which is similar to what President Obama did. But even farther than that, the health care program that he sponsored included a provision where any girl that's pregnant in Massachusetts can get an abortion for $50.
Mm.
And that's still the way it is law there today. And even, you know, he says he's changed his mind on this, but I have not heard him go back and say and ask the people in Massachusetts to forgive him for this and ask them to repeal this section of that law.
Yeah, I was actually, the Greenville News gave me a call yesterday, and they asked me about a number of different things, but one of them was about Mitt Romney and what I thought about the flip-flopping. And I said, you know, obviously, as pro-life people are trying to convince other people who are not pro-life, we like to see that somebody has changed their view, so we're happy about the change of view. The question, though, for us is, was it just done for political expediency? And that's a much harder thing to gauge, of course. You know, we're not judging somebody's heart. But when the way that we ascertain whether or not we think that is what's taking place is when we look at what they did afterwards. And so you're saying that if we were to look at what's currently taking place and what Mitt Romney could have done after saying that he was pro-life, is not squaring with a pro-life profession. Am I understanding that correctly?
Yes. I mean, I, from my perspective, if, you know, since he put this provision where any pregnant girl can get an abortion for $50, and it's law in Massachusetts right now, first off, there needs to be a public apology for that if he's really changed his heart about this. And secondly, he ought to ask the people in Massachusetts to change this. Ask the representatives and senators. He ought to have a letter requesting this to be changed and saying that this should never have been put forth, because there's been thousands of babies that have been killed under the legislation that was he signed into law as governor of Massachusetts.
Mm-hmm. Jim Bob, what will Senator Santorum do when he is, if he's elected president? What specific steps will he take in order to make real, practical changes to abortion being provided throughout the country today? And not only on abortion, we're talking on one issue here, but other issues as well, like marriage, protecting marriage. What specific plans does he have in place to make real change?
Well, Rick Santorum is a family man, and he's going to look at everything from how it's going to affect families. And I think the first thing he's going to do is he's going to appoint pro-life Supreme Court justices, which is huge. And it's something that some of our other presidents have not done that. When you see where we're at today, and it's been about you know, almost 39 years now that we've had abortion legal in America, and you know, God help us for these 53 million babies that have been killed.
Mm-hmm.
But then Rick Santorum is he's an expert on foreign affairs. He's somebody that also grew up, both of his parents worked for the VA. His dad was a veteran, and he really has a heart for veterans. He grew up living in a VA apartment and interacting with a lot of the veterans there, the VA, and he served on the Armed Services Committee, and he just really he's a very smart man, very articulate, and he's somebody that believes in a strong national defense, and he I think he will cut waste out of anything. I mean, even our national defense, he's somebody that has, even up in Iowa, running his campaign, he drove around in a pickup truck all throughout Iowa having 381 meetings the people in Iowa, where his opponent spent millions and millions of dollars in advertising, and basically had a virtual tie there in Iowa with Mitt Romney. Of course, Mitt Romney won New Hampshire. Of course, that's his home area.
Right.
But I really believe that the people in South Carolina are going to help decide this election for the United States. And so we ask people to call their friends and neighbors, their Facebook, Twitter, that he is the man we need to get behind. I think we all need to consolidate behind him now. And, yes, there's some other candidates that are running that have some good stands on different issues. Mm-hmm. But, really, Rick Santorum is the one that we've got to get behind.
You were we were comparing Rick Santorum there for a few moments between Mitt Romney, but you mentioned a number of times, as you've talked about Rick Santorum, you've mentioned his military expertise as well and his foreign policy. One of the other candidates that has gotten a little bit of traction, even here in South Carolina, is Ron Paul. And, of course, if you watched the debate there last night, I thought the debate didn't go well for him last night at all, specifically on the issue of foreign affairs. You highlighting that with Rick Santorum, obviously you don't feel that, as Ron Paul apparently did, that Iran having a nuclear bomb is not a major issue. We need somebody in there that understands that issue and is going to address it appropriately. Is that fair to say?
Yes, and Ron Paul, you know, he's got a few issues that I would agree on. I mean, we do need to streamline government, and he's got some points that he brings out that I think that most conservatives would agree. But then he goes so far almost to the right that he almost ends up on the left, like he doesn't believe in regulating anything, which sounds good on the surface, but he doesn't believe in regulating pornography, keeping it away from children. He doesn't believe in regulating drugs, and that's the reason he's got a lot of the people that are for the drug movement that are holding up signs for him. He wants to just deregulate everything, and it sounds good on the surface, but when you think about the implications and how that would domino and the side effects that would happen, it would cause all kinds of catastrophes. And so, and even bringing our military home sounds good on the surface, but when you think about, you know, in World War II, we had half our naval fleet sitting there in Pearl Harbor, and the Japanese came over and bombed us, and it just about cost us the war. So we can't afford to be a sitting duck. Our military, scattered throughout the world, is really what makes our nation strong. And we're not attacked on our homeland because anybody that knows that if they attack us, we will retaliate. And I'm very concerned about our current president that's actually cutting our military spending, and we need to keep a strong defense. And Rick Santorum realizes that. He's somebody that's very vocal about that. It doesn't mean that we don't have waste in the military, that maybe we need to streamline some things, but we need to keep a strong military. Rick Santorum is for our gun rights. He's somebody that, he's for less government control. He's for small businesses. He's for standing up for the senior citizens. He's for life, not just pro-life at the beginning, but he's for standing up for our senior citizens and for their care and honoring our veterans and different ones that have made our country who it is.
Amen. Well said. Jim Bob, I want to thank you for taking the time out. I'm going to tell the folks here, in just a minute where you're going to be right after the program today. I also wanted to express on behalf of myself and the folks here at Christian Talk 660 and the listeners as well, our condolences on the death of your child, and Jubilee, I think her name was, right? Yeah. Jubilee Shalom. And I just want to let you know that many folks in our listening audience were praying for your wife and your family, yourself as well. And we just rejoice with you in the sense that you'll see little Jubilee again someday in glory. And we thank you guys for the witness that you've given across the country for such a strong witness for Christ on your television program.
Well, thank you very much, Kevin. And also, we encourage everybody to check out our website at beggarfamily.com. We have a lot of resources that have helped our family to draw close together, and I think it will help other families.
Thank you for mentioning that. I will mention it here again, and your book as well that's there. We'll see you later on this afternoon up there at Chick-fil-A. Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Jim Bob. That was Jim Bob Duggar. He mentioned the website there. You can read a letter out there that his wife Michelle wrote about the daughter that just passed away December 11th. You can get information about their book. Their book is called A Love That Multiplies, and that website is www.duggarfamily.com. That's duggarfamily.com. You can go out there and find out all the information. I'll tell you about where they're going to be when we come back from the break. Stay tuned.
You're listening to Knowing the Truth with Pastor Kevin Bowling. For more information about today's program, the radio ministry, and the resources we offer, go to www.knowingthetruth.org.
Why is Newt Gingrich on the attack? After two fourth-place finishes, Newt is desperate. Leading conservatives call Gingrich's attacks, quote, foolish and destructive, disgusting and over the top, end quote. Rush Limbaugh compares Newt to left-wing Democrats, saying,
this is not conservatism, it's a polar opposite of conservatism.
Newt is attacking, quote, as harshly as any Democrat, is morphing into an Occupy Wall Street zealot, and shows his, quote, nasty anti-free market self. CNN Money says Newt's allies are intentionally obscuring Mitt Romney's record with, quote, a series of errors taken completely out of context. And Senator Jim DeMint defends Romney, saying,
it really worries me when some Republicans start sounding like Democrats.
Newt has more baggage than the airlines and was fined $300,000 for ethics violations. Don't be fooled by Newt's desperate attacks. Paid for by Restore Our Future, which is responsible for the content of this message, not authorized by any candidate or candidates committee. RestoreOurFuture.com.
This is Myron Cervajan of Christian Learning Centers of Greenville County. For 15 years, it has been our privilege to serve families in this area through our Release Time Christian Education Program. We would like to take this time to thank all of our ministry friends, individuals, churches, business owners, the South Carolina Christian Foundation, and Vilo Charities for your confidence and willingness to invest in the spiritual development of public school students in our community. We look forward to a continued partnership with you as we strive to provide Release Time programs for every public middle school and high school in Greenville County.
Hi, this is R.C. Sproul. Please join us for the 2012 Ligonier Ministries National Conference in Orlando, March 15th to 17th. We'll be focusing on the Christian mind. I'll be joined by Sinclair Ferguson, Robert Godfrey, Michael Horton, Steve Lawson, Al Mohler, Stephen Meyer, R.C. Sproul Jr., and Del Tackett. Call 800-435-4343 or visit ligonier.org to register. I hope to see you there.
Hi, this is Pastor Kevin Bowling, host of the Knowing the Truth radio program. Let me tell you about a special event called Teach Them Diligently, coming March 15th through the 17th to the Spartanburg Expo Center. Parents will learn how to enhance the homeschool instruction of their children. Speakers include Ken Ham, Vody Bachum, Doug Phillips, and many more. Plus, there will be over 150 workshops. For more information, go to teachthemdiligently.net.
Welcome back to Knowing the Truth with Pastor Kevin Bowling. Information regarding the resources referenced on today's program can be found at www.knowingthetruth.org. Now, here to continue with today's program is Pastor Kevin Bowling.
Hey, welcome back into the second half of the Knowing the Truth radio program. I mentioned just before the break that I would tell you where the Duggars are going to be. By the way, the Duggars endorsed my daughter's photography shop here in Greenville. They went ahead and said, hey, this is Jim, Bob, Michelle Duggar, and we encourage you to go over to Kachu Photography over on Woodruff Road. So if you're interested, and I know a lot of the folks listening today, if you like the Duggars, If you heard a thing about homeschooling there just a few moments ago and a commercial about that, if you're homeschoolers and you got families, that you're going to need good quality photographs, and I recommend you go over there to Kachu Photography over on Woodruff Road right here in Greenville. Up next, though, let me give you the website again for the Duggars. It's www.duggarfamily.com. A number of resources out there for you to take advantage of. And the Duggars will be right here in Greenville, right up on Pelham Road this afternoon at 3:30 p.m. They're going to be up there. They actually have a large bus. They have a large kind of like a more of almost like a RV type of thing, right? But it's a huge bus, and right now they have an endorsement of Senator Rick Santorum. It says Rick Santorum for president right on the side of the bus. So they're going to be up there speaking. I don't know exactly what the format is going to be, but they'll be speaking. The last time I saw them in person, they actually had the kids come out, and they came out with their violins, and the kids played violin, and then Jim Bob came up and spoke for a few moments. So I don't know if that's the format or not, but Chick-fil-A, Pelham Road, 3:30 this afternoon. I'll be up there. Come on up and say hello. I'll be right up front there because we're helping out with the sound for the event. They've got my PV amplifier system that we're using up there, so we're trying to help them out just to make sure everybody will be able to hear what is being said. So come on up and say hello. I'd love to meet you, and come get some Chick-fil-A. Hey, Chick-fil-A and the Duggars. Hey, this is a no-brainer. Come on, this is an easy one. So we'll see you up there this afternoon at 3:30. Let's switch gears just slightly. I was mentioning in the introduction about the idea of that some people feel that there may be a perfect candidate out there that we need to choose, and they're looking for, you know, Mr. Perfect that fits everything. And I was trying to remind people that everybody and anybody that we elect is going to be a fallen and a flawed individual. They may be a believer, but they still have the remaining tenets of sin, of the fall of the old man in them. So we're just not going to be able to find a perfect candidate. And nevertheless, we have to look at the character of the candidates that we're considering, because integrity matters, and we need to look, is this a person that gives us a good sense of integrity, that they really are honest in what they're saying, that they're going to do what they're promising? These types of things are very important. Here to talk with me about those issues on the second half of the program today is Bruce Barron. Bruce is an author. He's got, I think, three books that he's written, and we'll talk about those books here just briefly in a few moments. And he's also was president. He'd like for me to say that. He was also Senator Santorum's press secretary 22 years ago. Probably before many people in the listening audience actually heard of Senator Rick Santorum. So he held that post with then-Senator Santorum 22 years ago. And now he is actually a grassroots volunteer, and he's here in the Greenville area. We happened to cross paths over the last few days, and I said, this is a great story about you being now in the Greenville area on your own dime, actually here trying to drum up support for Senator Santorum. I think that says something, and I wanted to hear Bruce in his own words talk about this issue. So, Bruce, welcome to the Knowing the Truth radio program.
It's great to be with you, Kevin.
I mentioned that we would talk a little bit about your books. Let's talk about the three books. Give us the title of the book first of all, and then give us a little synopsis of what people would find in those books. And let's leave the one dealing with the health wealth gospel to the end, because I want to say something about that.
Okay, sure. Long ago, long before I fell into politics, I was doing a PhD in American evangelicalism. I was a scholar in the charismatic movement. That's how the Health and Wealth Gospel book was written in 87. I was writing in the late 80s and early 90s about evangelicals and their role in politics, and decided that I had similar limited government convictions and that I could serve God perhaps by volunteering within the Republican Party. My dissertation was published by Zondervan then as Heaven on Earth in 92. And I think all my books, they're old enough, they're all available at Amazon for a penny plus shipping. So that keeps me humble. But anyway, it was in 1990 that I offered my services, seeing if I could be just an effective Christian servant, because I really wanted to rehabilitate the somewhat flawed image of the Christian right at that point as people who just wanted to pound others into submission. I wanted to show Christian servanthood. And the guy said, go see this young man named Rick Santorum who's running for Congress. So with my media background and typing speed, I ended up as his press secretary. That was an amazing experience, which I can say some more about. We put out 55 press releases. We set up the record for most press releases unread and most press conferences unattended, because nobody thought he could win. When he won, I stayed on his staff, 91 and 94, and then left to see my own kids again, and wrote after that another book for university called Politics for the People, which is just a guide to how Christians and others can do honest politics, and that came out in 96.
Very interesting. You got an interesting background, and the way that you ended up here right now, I think, is very interesting. I want to get your take then. You have personal experience with Senator Santorum, and I certainly want to get there. But I wanted to make a little bit of a tie to the book dealing with the health wealth gospel, because the teaching in that health wealth gospel a lot of times is almost as if as I know it's not the title of that book, but almost as if we're living heaven on earth, that sickness and the things associated with the curse will not have any effect upon us while we live here, almost stretching it to the point that we can almost live in a perfect environment now. And I think that ties in to the idea of people looking for a perfect candidate and not realizing that this candidate is not going to be able to do everything that they think that they would like to have done. He's not going to be able to change culture. Only the gospel can do that. So I wanted to make sure people have a right perspective of what to expect from any candidate. Do you see that there'd be a little bit of connection between those two things?
Definitely. No, there's a fascinating connection. When I was doing the theological work long ago, writing on the health and wealth gospel, the phrase that so many theologians use and that I drew on is the balancing of the already and the not yet. Mm-hmm. Most of the people who emphasize the health and wealth gospel, at least the ones with the best theology, and it's not only charismatics. A.B. Simpson, the founder of the Christian and Missionary Alliance, actually held to a similar view about healing. They would read those passages, that by his stripes we are healed and so forth, and say we ought to be able to claim this. Mm-hmm. And we can't do the full theology here unless you have an extra 3 hours on the program. But generally, the view is, even among those who would say, yes, this is part of the gospel, that God also wants to bring us healing, that for reasons we don't always understand, it doesn't always happen right now. So basically what we end up saying is, yes, we have all these promises from God, but just like our salvation, hey, we're all going to die, right? We're going to pass through some pains and so forth. So there's much we have from God now already, but there's some we won't have now. We can't have it yet until we get to heaven. Now, the parallel to the politics is, often the Christian right, especially when it first got aroused in the 1980s, really saw America turning away and thought, if we could just empower ourselves politically, we could turn America around and bring it back to God and so forth. Well, we can certainly have an impact, but we have to recognize there is not going to be any perfect society this side of heaven either. Mm-hmm. Even the postmillennialists, who thought ultimately everything will come right before the return of Christ, that was a long way off. And I think most of us have come to see, if that's ever going to happen at all, there aren't too many postmillennialists months left here, but it's probably not going to happen in our lifetimes. And so what we have to say is, yes, we can serve God through the political realm, but the same way, if we have people who are open to God's will, they can have a positive impact, but we can't expect everything to change overnight. Mm. Even if we could elect a perfect president, guess what? He could only sign what gets through the Congress.
Yeah, right. So we wouldn't have a perfect Congress, and we wouldn't have a perfect people that he would be ruling over. He wouldn't be in a perfect environment to be able to do that. And so, obviously, it just would not produce what we think that it would. We were just mentioning a minute ago with Jim Bob Duggar as he was on the program. We gave him the condolences on behalf of the station and the program and the listening audience because of the death of a child. I mean, so right in that, I received an email the other day that a good report about Johnny Erickson Tata. And Johnny Erickson Tata, besides the other afflictions that she has recently, pretty recently, been diagnosed with breast cancer. And she was sending out a report saying that she had just went for the latest checkup, and the checkup was it hasn't come back. And so that was a good report. You mentioned to me that one of the reasons why you became interested in this related to Johnny Erickson Tata. Tell our listening audience what I'm referring to.
Sure. As an example of what you have to learn to deal with in the spirit of civility, before my wife and I got married, she was doing an internship in Southeast Kansas, and she had friends who were with a sort of faith church or health and wealth gospel type church. And another church, Nazarene Church, brought Johnny Erickson Tata's movie into town. And the faith church took an ad out in the newspaper, basically opposing Johnny Erickson Tata, saying, "We do not believe it is God's will for anybody to suffer disease or sickness," and so forth.
Hmm.
Well, that was a pretty strong statement. It left my wife-to-be's head spinning a little bit theologically, and I ended up getting a book out of it. But the point is that we learned, you know, there were obviously some strong disagreements there. I didn't think they were right on there theologically. I have great respect for Johnny Erickson Tata, who I got to write about subsequently and get to know personally in the 80s.
Hmm.
But it's a reminder, in the Christian church, we will have disagreements too. And if they're not disagreements that affect salvation, we should disagree with civility,
mm-hmm.
the same way as we should do in politics.
Mm. Good point. And I'm glad you made that transition to the idea of civility, because you've mentioned in the couple comments that you've made just a few moments ago about the harshness of conservatives, the Christian right you've spoken about a few times, and it became noted for this harsh edge and bullhorns and placards. But it did more recently take a little bit of a turn where we started to hear this phrase, compassionate conservatism. I think maybe Marvin Alasky, who World Magazine supports the program and does the program on Wednesday. They're on with me every Wednesday. I think that phrase may have originated with him. Where is compassionate conservatism? What has happened to it? Tell us a little bit from the political aspect of how it did, and you know, what's the lifespan of it now? Where's it at now?
I'd love to. Now, I need to be careful to say I was Rick Santorum's press secretary 22 years ago, not this time around.
Right.
I love his integrity. I'm not a spokesperson for the campaign, so don't interpret it me.
That's why we have it. No.
That's right. I'm the one who can get in trouble.
Yeah.
But Rick Santorum in 2005 wrote a book called It Takes a Family, sort of a response to It Takes a Village. And in his preface, he talks about how in 1993 and 94, he represented a district that included the old steel towns around Pittsburgh that were in severe poverty, and how he realized that he opposed the liberal vision for the poor. But what was the conservative vision for the poor anyhow? Most Republicans don't have one. And he didn't want to be that kind of guy. He didn't think that's God's call to us, to ignore the poorest and the neediest. That's certainly not what the gospel looks like.
Sure.
When I first heard compassionate conservative, it was back in the late 80s. I think Jack Kemp used that term effectively.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly the second Bush, I believe, used that term effectively. But it really represents an attitude that I think continues now to say, let's not just cut everything, but let's say, what is the role for government constructively to support the structures that can best do what needs to be done?
Mm-hmm.
If you read Rick Santorum's book or listen to him philosophically, he consistently stresses family, church, local organizations can do better than big government, and so we have to put as much back there as we can. But that means then maybe there's a role for the government in supporting those institutions. When I worked as a congressional aide for Rick Santorum from 91 to 94, I used to see grant proposals like for housing and urban development that basically said any religious organizations need not apply. The wall between church and state was too big. Since then, and especially with Bush 43, we've seen a much greater openness to faith-based organizations. And that's a lot of what Marvin Olasky used to push way back in the 90s. That, hey, people who are motivated by their faith can often care for those in prison, those in need, those with disabilities, better than anybody else. And so that's part of what compassionate conservatives are for. And it's fascinating to see how much of that is what Rick Santorum has stood up for over time, whether in welfare reform, just reading his book about a reverse commuting proposal, he's saying, yeah, there's a role for the government to help people from economically distressed areas to get transportation to areas where there are jobs, and many other things like that where we can say government has a role, a limited role, but a positive role in reaching those in greatest need.
That book that Marvin wrote called The Tragedy of American Compassion, basically, he sequestered himself in the Library of Congress, and all he basically did in that book, I say all, it was quite a feat, but he went through how did the church and society deal with the poor throughout from the beginning of the founding of this country until the modern day. And a couple of the conclusions in there were that there was always accountability built into it. And this sense of entitlement was not something that was found in the early days. You had to show the need and you had to be willing to work. I remember one instance in the book where he talked about that the housing for the men a lot of times was next door to where the housing, the halfway houses for the women were. And the men, if they wanted a meal, they could chop one cord of wood and they would be given a meal. If they wanted to stay the night as well as have a meal, they had to chop two cords of wood. Now, the wood then was given to the halfway house for the women, so that it provided the fuel then for the women to be able to cook and to be able to heat and those types of things. So today, to request that somebody provide work in order for to be on the public dole would be anathema. I mean, we would be scorned in our society today. Are these the types of principles, though, that Rick Santorum is espousing in his presidential campaign?
Yeah, and actually, although some of that's still anathema, I mean, a lot of that was passed in the 1996 welfare reform bill when Bill Clinton was trying to rehabilitate himself a little bit to get reelected. He moved to the center, and you heard that if you were listening to the debate last night. Both Senator Santorum and Newt Gingrich really emphasized clearly, and they both have very strong philosophies in that regard and have for a long time, on the value of work. It's very striking to hear Rick say, he cited the Brookings Institute study. He said, the liberals tend to want to give handouts to help people. And we may think it's good-intentioned, or well-intentioned, rather, but it tends to lead to dependency. And he said, what really helps people get somewhere in life? Well, it's if you graduate from high school, it's if you get a job, it's you get married, you have children, you take on personal responsibility, and you fulfill it. And so that's very much an application of what I would consider, I mean, somebody said this a long time ago, if he won't work, don't let him eat. That's in the New Testament. Exactly. So it's a very true principle being applied to sensible government.
And I'm afraid that sometimes bleeding heart Christians race in and they want to remove those hunger pains, thinking that they're being compassionate. But when in reality, they're removing the God-given motivation for that person to get a job.
Yeah.
And so we shouldn't, there is such a thing as a helping of somebody that actually hurts in the long run. And I'm afraid that many Christians and evangelicals haven't thought that whole thing through. So it'd be helpful to have somebody who could articulate that process. Just repeat that one more time. I don't know if for folks especially that didn't see the debate last night, Rick Santorum specifically pointed and he gave statistics associated with it that if those three things were present, I forget what he said, 70% of the people, you could articulate it better. Tell us those three things that need to be present for somebody to move out of poverty, and then maybe you remember some of the statistics associated with it.
Sure. What he says is, according to the Brookings study, if you graduate from high school, get married, and you have children, you have a 2% likelihood of being in poverty and a 77% likelihood of having above the average income. And what's frustrating is, you know, this has been this way for a long time. When I was working for then Congressman Santorum in the 90s, that was when Charles Murray's book, Losing Ground, came out. And it was so controversial about what needs to be done for the African-American community. I was shocked. We had at that time in the heavily Democratic, 10% African-American district. We spent a lot of time in black communities, and you still see that strong commitment in Rick Santorum today. But I was absolutely shocked to discover the out-of-wedlock birth rate then in the black community was 68%. Mm-hmm. And from my experience, I don't think it's changed much today. Well, this is a ticket to multi-generational poverty. Mm-hmm. And African-Americans who understand that, and there are many of them, are trying to recognize and promote the view of the traditional family. And that's what Rick does so well. Instead of, oh, a stimulus package is what's going to fix our economy. No, going back to traditional family principles and emphasizing them and having government that actually finds ways to support them, such as increasing the deduction for children, will make a big, big difference.
Well, when you say that, increasing the deduction for children, I mentioned one of the candidates, Ron Paul, advocates more of a hands-off approach from the government, that his idea of government seems to be fundamentally different from the idea that Rick Santorum or Newt Gingrich would have. In other words, they believe that there is a positive role that government can play. The people that don't agree with that, they say, well, you can't legislate morality. But apparently, we can legislate, or we can help with incentives to lift people out of poverty, and we can better society through proper legislation. Do you agree?
Oh, right. And guess what? We are legislating morality, as Richard Neuhaus and so many others said. Well, it's just who's legislating for morality? When President Obama's administration says, if you're going to get federal funds, you can't teach abstinence, that's legislating morality. It's just not our morality.
Mm-hmm. So it's who's more, somebody's viewpoint is going to be put in place. The practical effects of that are going to be put
exactly.
in place.
Exactly. And I think of some biblical examples I used to cite when I talked about this a lot. In Joseph in the book of Genesis, in an emergency situation, he took over the food supplies.
Right.
Well, that wouldn't be the normal activity, but that was certainly justified. You clearly will find in the scriptures an emphasis on institutions other than government as meeting most of our needs, but you don't see any specific strictures on government, cannot do this, cannot do this, cannot do this. Mm-hmm. So what you get is, and I wrote this up in the book Heaven on Earth, you get a general tendency that the scriptures and Christian tradition are aligned with limited government, but certainly nothing that would say we shouldn't use government in a positive way to support the values that we would hold dear. And that's when it comes back to then, of course, government is not going to save us, but we as Christians should care to be the salt and light of the earth, to get involved in government situations and support those who are most in line with us.
Restraining evil and promoting good,
exactly.
Right? Okay, it comes down to that. Bruce Barron, how do people get a hold of you if they say, boy, I'd really like to read Bruce's book, especially now that I know that I can get him at such a good value, like he said. How could they get in touch with you to find out how they could get a copy of your book?
Sure. Well, for the next 3 days, they can show up at the Rick Santorum phone bank, because as you were saying, I believe in his integrity enough. I volunteered to give him 2 weeks. I said, Rick, if you can do this for 20 years, I can give you 12 days.
Okay.
So I came down last Tuesday, and I'm at 1537 Wade Hampton from the end of this interview through Saturday, I think. Feel free to come and say hi. Other than that, the easiest is just my email address, bruce.barron, B-A-R-R-O-N, digit 0@gmail.com. The last two books did go out of print a little early, so I still have quite a few in my house.
Okay.
But obviously, I want to be a public servant long beyond the election day, so if I can be helpful to anybody, I'm happy to.
Excellent. Give us that email address one more time.
Sure. Bruce, B-R-U-C-E dot B-A-R-R-O-N, the digit 0 at gmail.com.
Okay. Well, Bruce, thank you very much for coming in. I really appreciate it. Bruce and I got talking over the phone, and as I found out more about him, I said, wow, this would be a story that the listening audience of the Knowing the Truth radio program would be interested in hearing. So I really appreciate you coming by.
Thanks. It's great to be on with you.
Let me tell the listening audience where we're going in the next couple of days. I mentioned that all this week, obviously, because at the end of the week will be the South Carolina primary. The GOP primary will be taken on Saturday morning. And so, obviously, leading up to that, I'm just trying to help us as believers to think through these issues and to think through them from a biblical perspective. And so, tomorrow on the program, some of the folks I have scheduled, and we're working out exactly when they're going to be on, but former Speaker of the House, Newt Gingrich, is scheduled to be up with me first tomorrow on the broadcast. And then after that, we'll be joined by World Magazine to talk about a couple of issues. David Barton is, we're trying to work out when he's going to be on the program with me. And then on Thursday's broadcast, Calvin in the Public Square, we'll be talking with David Hall. And Tony Perkins will be in the mix there as well. Tony was there the last week and at that meeting of evangelicals. And so we want to hear from Tony Perkins from the Family Research Council. We want to hear from him about what actually took place in that meeting and what was the outcome. So we'll hear it right from somebody who was there. Remember this, the Lord Jesus Christ said, "You shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free." We'll see you again here next time on Knowing the Truth.
You've been listening to Knowing the Truth with Pastor Kevin Bowling. Knowing the Truth is the outreach ministry of the Mountain Bridge Bible Fellowship, located on Highway 25 in Travelers Rest. For more information about the church and radio ministry, visit us on the web at knowingthetruth.org.
The opinions expressed on today's program are those of the announcers, their guests, and callers, and do not necessarily represent those of the staff and management of His Radio Network, the Radio Training Network, or Clear Channel Communications.
Life-changing teaching and talk for the Carolinas and Georgia. Christian Talk 660, WLFJ, Greenville, Spartanburg, Anderson.